Interview with Judge Fred Bailey for the Youngstown State University Oral History Program by Michael Graham at his office in Youngstown on December 9th, 1991 at 9 a.m.
Start out with something pretty simple. Why don't you tell me about your childhood, the early years as you were growing up?
Well, I was born in 1928, and shortly thereafter, we're in a depression time, so it was exciting. Nobody had much money. Dad worked at Cheatin' Tube. I guess he was off for about 2.5 years, and I grew up over in Brownie Woods, the south side, and went to Jackson School, and after I went, I think, 2 or 3 years of Jackson School, we moved over onto the east side on Shei Street, and I attended Lincoln School there, then went on to East High School, and in East High School I went into the Marine Corps, and then I got out of the Marine Corps. I went to Youngstown College, got a degree at Youngstown College, got my LLB from Youngstown University, and got the doctorate from Youngstown State University. So I got them all in order over there. Scouting, I can say I was in the Boy Scouts, and I'm still in the Boy Scouts, and still enjoy that. I was president for approximately 7 years. The Owning County Valley Council. And I guess you can say, your childhood went along. Anything specific you want to know about childhood?
You mentioned you grew up on the south side. What was it like? When were you a child on the south side?
Well, like I say, I was born in 28, and I think we moved off probably when I was about 10. And I think we moved at the time because they sold the house we were living in, so which made it pretty simple. And then I attended grade school, like I say, at Lincoln School on the east side, and then went to East High School when I got out of there.
When were you in the Marine Corps?
From August of 46 to March of 1948.
Where were you stationed?
Cherry Point, North Carolina.
What did you do? What were you doing?
Well, and there I was since that was the aviation end of it, I was a metalsmith. But while I was there, I made the basketball team. So we traveled all over the country.
You had a basketball team.
Right. Actually, when I went to East, I played basketball up there. And before I went to the Marine Corps, the coach at the time was John Hunter up there, and he said he could probably get me a scholarship to Ohio U to play ball, but being the size I am today, no place in the picture today for a guard. Now they're 6'4" and what have you, so, but I did get to play for Cherry Point, and we did fly all over the country, so.
Where'd you play?
We played North Carolina State.
Did
we played Eastern Carolina, which I see now is had a good football team this year. Mm-hmm. I think they're in the playoffs. Yeah, we played all over South and Long Island. We played mostly military bases.
You know. How'd you guys do?
Pretty good. That's when we had to crash land, too, coming back from one of those, which always makes me a little leery of flying today.
me a little bit about your parents.
Well, my mother and dad grew up in Meigs County, Ohio, which is Pomeroy. That's the boot of Ohio. And you go down 7 through Steubenville, that you end up down in that particular. My dad came up here from the farm. They were all farms at that time, and they come up here and got in Youngstown sheet and tube, and pretty much took care of things in that direction, so that we became from the northern part of Ohio rather than the southern. Mom was a housewife and Dad worked in the mill.
What did he do in the mill?
He was a heat treater. The heat treater ran different heats on different metals and
Well, tell me about Youngstown. At the time, it was Youngstown College.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about Youngstown College, and then more particularly, tell me a little bit, or a lot, as much as you can remember, about the law school, what the law school was like.
Well, we were on Wick Avenue, up near the Butler Wick on the corner up there, Wick Oval and Market. It was a magnificent old building, like all of them are up there. And they were in business for a while until they had to comply with the American Bar Association standards, which at the time called for a professor and three full-time teachers, plus $1 million library. I think at the time the library was in question, but undoubtedly today it's many, many times worth more than that. But seeing that the crunch was there, it looks like financially for the college that it wasn't a paying situation. So eventually, as you know, they wound up the law school there.
What was it like? Tell me about some of your instructors.
Well, one of them, John Newman, was one. And Mr. Falls and Knowles Wyatt was one of the old professors there that had quite a reputation for being a stern taskmaster, and he had a habit of saying when you come to his class you put the title outside the door so that he didn't really care who you were. And if you couldn't make class, no matter where you were in any part of the country, you were to call him and tell him you wouldn't be there. And if you weren't prepared, and he'd call on you to recite orally on the different cases, if you weren't prepared, he just threw you out.
In law school?
That's right. And when he started class, when the door went closed, it was closed. No one got in. In fact, we had one fellow in our law school that was teaching at Youngstown College, and he tried to get in and was very unsuccessful. He told him he didn't care who he was and you'd be there on time. I'd warned the guy, we just got through with one class, and to get up there, but he figured with his credentials he could get in, but he was mistaken.
Was he a good teacher, though?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very good teacher. Taught you to really get up on your feet, talk, really. So he was really, I think, preparing you for later on.
How would you rate the law school?
Well, according to the figures at that time, you know, it was very successful. We had a high rate of fellows passing the bar examination. So it was, I think, highly renowned at that time.
How'd you do on the bar?
Just fair, you know. You just enough to get by.
Yeah.
Is what I think. 75 was the passing mark, and I forget what I had. Not too much past that, I wouldn't think.
But you got by.
Right.
You made it first try?
No, I made it second try.
Second try. How did that work? And how long did you have to wait? How long was it in between?
I think about a year at the time, and I prepared myself by going down to Columbus and studying with a couple guys called Weiner Miner, who ran a course to prepare you for taking the bar. And it was a 3-day exam, and you went in at 8 o'clock and got started writing till at 8 o'clock, and then they took an hour off, and then at noon, and you were back at 1 for another 4 hours. Then the next day you started it over, and I think on the 3rd day you only went to noon. But it, like the professor said, you better get ready, because it's not only a test of what you know, but it's also an endurance contest.
Did anybody drop out?
It would be funny, because some people couldn't stand the pressure of it, and you'd look around and that seat would be empty after you come back from lunch or something, and guys would have eyes on them like owls, you know.
In between, when you didn't make the first time and the second time, what'd you do?
Let's see, I was working in the mill at the time, yeah. Okay. I was working at Sheet and Tube, only Briar Hill.
What did you do?
I was an electrician. For,
really?
Right.
Wow. Did you enjoy that?
Oh, yeah. I was the union rep for our shop, and I got to know quite a bit about the union activities, and kind of enjoyed that.
Tell me a little bit about that. That sounds like it kept you busy.
Well, in addition to working as an electrician, as a representative, if there was some grievance that come up, it would be filed, and you would really, on step one, really talk it over with your foreman and see if you couldn't work it out. And then you had a second meeting, if you couldn't, with management and the higher-ups in management, and if you weren't satisfied with their decision, then you could ask for arbitration, but because of the money involved, very few of them ever went to arbitration.
Okay. What did you do after you passed the bar?
Well, I was still working at Sheet and Tube, and then when I passed the bar, I quit. And then I came downtown, and wasn't too many people interested in me as a starting out attorney, but I did start the office with Don Hanna, which was also quite an experience. And
I spoke with him about, because he was a judge as well.
Mm-hmm, he went to Youngstown Law School too.
Were you in classes with him?
No, he was about 2 to 3 years ahead of me, so
okay.
So we didn't really have any classes together.
What were some of your early cases? I mean, with you and Attorney Hanna, I mean, it must have kept you two busy.
Yes, because he had a lot of cases, and I come down and he threw me right into the ringer right away, so I didn't... At the time, let's see, who was the, he had me take care of one of his divorces right away, and I didn't even know what questions to ask. I'd never, but old Judge Beckenbaugh was there, and his secretary was Miss Rankin over there, and she kind of guided me through, and she kind of ran the thing over there, so I was able to get through that, and he sent me over into Youngstown right away to try a shoplifter before Judge Nevin at the time. And of course, that was disastrous for his client, too, because although he was guilty anyway, but so that's how it started. And most of my cases would be in Youngstown Muni, and then a gradual developing until I made application to go to the Youngstown Humane Society as their assistant counsel over there.
What did you do over there? What were some of your... Well, it was like a day for you over there.
Well, a day over there, I had regular hours over there, and I interviewed people. The Humane Society at that time was not only the animal field, but it was also children and families division.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so okay. That I worked under the probate judge, not probate, the domestic relations judge. Harold Rickard was over there, and I would, on Tuesdays, we'd have contempt hearings. And that was for those people that weren't paying their support orders or alimony orders. And we'd go over there on Tuesday morning and decide whether they were really in a position to pay and had been just hedging. And if it wasn't satisfactory to the judge, they sometimes ended up in jail. I would have a copy of their earnings if they were working somewhere. And the copy of that was in front of the judge, and he could see what kind of money they were making. And some people just didn't really care. In addition to that, I took care of all the illegitimate or bastardy proceedings. We used to call them disputed paternity so that it didn't sound as bad. And also took care of all the reciprocal proceedings. And reciprocal is when the defendant or the woman is in a different state, and they would send the papers in for us to process them here to get them before the judge to put on a support order for their children. And in addition to that, I would interview these people a day to come in, and they would report to me that they weren't getting paid and what have you. And at that time, I would issue a number of warrants for their arrest, one for non-support, which was a misdemeanor, which would mean that they were subject to almost 6 months in the county jail, and if they were real bad, under neglect to provide, which was a felony punishable by time in the penitentiary. But I did mostly non-supports. And when wage assignments come in, it made it a little easier, because that way we could sign them up and send the wage assignment out to their employer, who would deduct the payments automatically. Mm-hmm. And they still have that today. In fact, it's mandatory under Judge Leskovansky now that they have a wage assignment on.
You mentioned two judges, Beckenbaugh?
Beckenbaugh, yeah. He was domestic relations judge, and later replaced by Judge Harold Rickard.
Okay, well, tell me a little bit about each of them. What were they like?
Well, Beckenbaugh was a legend in his time, I guess, and of course he didn't see too well, but he nevertheless was known as the woman's judge. But then most of the time that was probably normal, because the women usually get the children. Go to their mother for the most part, because man is usually out working and can't take care of his kids anyway during the day. So I guess that's why it ends up the custody goes to the wife so many times. But Beckenbaugh was pretty stern, but pretty fair guy. And then Judge Harold Rickard came in, and he was from I guess he was a coach at Austin Town for many years, and had one of his teams go to the state finals. And he was pretty sports orientated, and we would have long discussions about before we got started in the morning, till he got run out of things he wanted to talk about sports wise.
You a big sports fan?
Oh yeah.
What's your favorite?
Oh, they're all my favorite. I watch everything and listen to everything. No, Tiddlywinks aren't really my favorite, but you know, baseball, football, basketball, tennis, track. I watched pretty much all of it with the ESPN and all the programs. Now, heck, I can, you know, I watch track. I watch the swim meets. You know, I watch cycling. I'm not wild about the auto racing, but, you know, but for the most part, I watch it all.
Why don't we talk a little bit about when did you first become a judge?
I got elected in 1971, and I took the bench in 1972. I started in the Canfield County Court. And I had the Canfield Court, and then I had the, we have four courts. Sebring, Austin Town, Boardman, and Canfield. So I had started in Canfield, and then I went to Sebring for about 7 years. Took over Boardman for almost a year. And then I took over Austin Town. Although I've been in Austin Town probably 19 years anyway, because when I started in Canfield, they needed help in Austin Town, and so I've been sitting there. I sit there on Tuesday morning for forever, up to date. But I have it over there now. We have court Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday in Austin Town now.
In the morning or in the evening?
Well, I have one on Monday night. Okay. I really don't like night court, but this will save a lot of people, you know, that have to work during the day. So, and Monday nights is a bear out there now. And if you come out to the courtroom, usually every seat's taken. Yeah. And according to last year's statistics, the Austin Town Court did more than all the other three courts put together. We did 18,600 cases last year instead of a crossroads court where it started out with the JP and that. Now it's really got that big.
18,000 cases?
Yep.
How, I mean, okay, there's a world of questions with that alone, but I know in the city of Youngstown, what's the title of those courts? They're regional courts?
They're called the Mahoning County Courts.
Okay.
Mahoning County.
County Courts.
County Courts, yeah.
Okay.
And we're part-time. They've never made the county court full-time, so the county court judge can also practice law. And
yeah, I was going to say, that's why you're allowed to keep your law practice? Okay. If they were full-time, would you be required to live in, like, the district that you were presiding?
Well, I'd have to live in Mahoning County.
Oh, just Mahoning County?
Right.
Okay, that makes sense. It's a county court. I'm sorry. What were the majority of the cases?
Well, traffic is a big one out there. You know, we have 680 and 11 and 46, and, you know.
That's the majority of the cases?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
We have criminal, civil, and traffic. So we have the whole gamut as far as cases concerned.
Let's run through a typical day for you. Let's say today. Today's Monday. So let's go through a typical day.
Well, today being Monday, I'm here talking with you. And when we're through, I'll proceed to start to work on my own cases here, you know, that I have as a practicing attorney. And when I go home tonight, I'll have supper and then dash off to the county court out in Austin Town and try and get there a little early to take care of some of the paperwork and talk to some of the people that always seem to want to talk to you before you get started. And we'll run through the cases, and when I sit down, I don't get up to go to the restroom or answer any phone calls, and I sit there until I get the entire courtroom emptied, because I understand the people don't want to be there, so as soon as I can get them in and out, I try.
What time do you get to Austin Town?
Oh, I try and get there around 6:45 at least. And then as long as it takes to get done.
How long would you say it usually takes you?
I try and get done in 2 hours.
Okay. You usually successful?
Yep.
Are you?
Usually. Unless we have sometimes we have to try a case, you know.
Yeah.
I would rather try them on Tuesday mornings. Because that way, if I don't get them completed, then I'll come back after lunch and we'll go on from there. And of course, during the period of time, jury cases come up. People have a right to a jury, and when we have to have jury trials, we sit down at least 2 times a year for jury trials. The assignment commissioner here at the Mahoning County Common Pleas Court, they have the drum, they pick the names out, and they give us lists of prospective jurors, and from there we take that list and proceed.
What was the worst criminal case you ever had to do? What was...
Well, I think probably, well, there was a couple of them. I wasn't too happy with the one where the guy cut the woman's throat, but I think probably the one that got to me, or at least I felt the most, was where the guy was out on Kirk Road Extension, and I guess the border killed him and buried him in the basement. And when the family, the sons and that, got to looking into it, they went down in the basement, and when they seen what was happening down in there, they started to run, and one got shot in the back and was paralyzed, and I actually had to try that case up in the hospital. St. Eve's. Well, anyway, it was at one of the hospitals where they had a special wing in a room where I held the proceedings up there, because the young fellow that got shot was fairly well paralyzed and was in the hospital receiving treatment.
How do you deal with something like that? I mean, it's got...
Judicially.
Okay, what does judicially mean?
You afford the defendant all the rights that he's to receive, you know, as our Constitution sets out. You know, you're not guilty till proven otherwise. You have the preliminary hearing, and during that period of time, it's up to me to decide if there's probable cause, and bind them over to await the action of the Mahoning County Common Pleas Court pursuant to indictment by the Mahoning County Grand Jury.
Something like that, it would bother me a lot, and I wouldn't know. I mean, how do you deal with your emotions?
Well, I'm pretty well calm on the thing and sit there and listen, you know. I don't show much emotion any time.
It doesn't get to you, though?
No, not particularly. Can't be happy with it, but I mean, the idea is to proceed and as carefully as possible so that there's no error committed. You don't want to see someone that's really guilty get away on some technicality.
Yeah.
You know.
Civil cases. They're usually just...
Well, we have the small claims, and anybody that has a claim up to $1,000 normally files on their own, and this way they can handle their own case without need of putting out money for legal expenses. And most people do, although occasionally somebody hires an attorney, which makes it a little unfair for the other side, but I don't let that get out of hand, because they can ask anything, and procedurally I'm not going to sit on them unless they're trying to use hearsay or something, but what they know personally is certainly, and normally it's some money judgment that they've been hit and the guy didn't pay, by in their car. We have a lot of them for rent that they haven't paid. A lot of them, what we call the forcible and entry detainer, is really where the landlord is having them ejected from their premises, because normally they're not paying.
This is just a small sideline. How much, when you first started in Canfield, did you have a small claims court?
Yes.
How much was small claims then?
I think $300.
Okay.
Then it went to $5, and then it went to $1,000, and then we have the normal civil docket where you can sue up to $3,000 now.
Okay.
And they keep threatening to make that higher too, so, which I think probably will come eventually. And I think probably the courts will probably become full-time too, eventually.
When do you think that'll happen?
I don't know. The present Justice Moyer from the Supreme Court had that on his agenda, but I guess the many ramifications to it kind of holds that up. Not only would the, I'm talking about a judge get paid more, but where would the courts be, and how many courts would you have? Who would be the judges that stay? Probably the ones with the longest tenure. And how many would there be? They talked about consolidation for a long time. And at different times, different plans. At one time, they were talking about making everybody a division of the Common Pleas Court. So that comes up from time to time. They have mayor courts, and they haven't been, and they've been trying to knock out mayor's courts for years, and haven't been too successful, but I understand they have an awful powerful lobbyist group. And under the mayor's thing, you don't have to be an attorney to hold a mayor's court.
Okay. If it did become full-time,
yeah.
If the court became full-time, would you stay on? Would you go full-time as a...
Oh, yeah.
Would you?
Yeah.
Which do you prefer? Your duties as a judge or your duties as an attorney?
Well, I kind of got the best of both worlds, so...
You don't have to make the choice.
No.
When you are deciding a case...
Yeah.
And you get somebody who has, how do I put this, has a bad attitude towards the court, towards the system, and towards everything else. How do you deal with that? Does that affect how you sentence him?
It should, but it doesn't. I try and keep my cool and listen to it and try and picture myself in that situation. So it's pretty, it takes an awful lot to get me riled up, you know. And no, I'm not vindictive, you know. I handle them all just about the same as I would any other ones.
Which is?
For it, go ahead, which is what?
How do you handle it?
Well, I proceed just like I would on any other case. I don't try and pick on personalities. I don't have attorneys that I don't like. And I don't have people that, you know, that naturally you have to get them straightened out, you know. And I have had them, and I just say, hey. Normally, they're usually the ones that are in jail when they come there. And the Mahoney County Jail has them transported out there, and I usually... have from, well, I would say normally out in Austintown on a Monday night, like from 4 to 10 different people that are in jail for some reason or other. And normally they get picked up on the weekend, and I get to see them on Monday night or Tuesday morning for the most part.
Conversely, if somebody comes in there and is just super nice and super polite and super everything else, does that affect?
Why, sure. If you don't have a negative attitude, you're trying to, I would feel more inclined to help these people. Mm-hmm. And most of them are there for the first time in their life anyway. most people only been in court on a traffic violation once in their life.
You've been on the bench now 20 years. Have the criminals gotten worse? Have the criminals gotten worse? Let's start off with that.
Well, I would think so. You know, with the drug picture in there, like on the Blevins and Drake case, police come to me to get a search warrant because they couldn't get in, you know. And it was obvious I thought it was obvious that there was no tracks out of the place in the snow for a couple of days. And they suspected the same thing, too, that there was something the matter. So when they got in there, but that was a pretty bad case where the guy was tied up with duct tape and stabbed so many times, and the knife was so poor and it bent, and the dog was there and actually, you know, lapped up some of the blood. You know, that's kind of gruesome. You know, it's got to get to you a little bit when you're concerned with people, to think how heinous that crime was, you know. Of course, Youngstown College was involved there as well, you know. Yeah. Youngstown State University, let me take that back. Okay.
But you don't think the criminals have gotten worse?
Well, if you kill somebody, you were just as dead back then as you are now, so... Yeah, the drug picture may have it where people... Many people aren't under their full facilities, you know. But as far as being worse, I can't, you know, like I say, once you're dead, you know. So, yeah, the crimes are bad, but I would say they're on par with any other time.
Do you think that
more robberies now, you know, because of the drug angle, you know, people where they have the urge to get the money for the cocaine or whatever they're on, you know, makes them take more chances and makes, I think, our crime picture much broader.
So you would say that not necessarily have the crimes gotten worse. Let's put it that way.
Well, the crimes are still the same. They're all still the same. Sure, they're still on the in the books, the statutes, you know, which covers most instances.
They've just become more numerous?
Well, I don't know. Well, I would think that they're on... Well, our statistics show they're on the rise, you know. Just look at Mahoney County this year. But that doesn't mean they're coming through my court, you know. But they are going through the court system somewhere. And, yeah, look at us now. What, 50 what? 56 or 7, wherever we're at now?
Yeah.
Highest rate ever we've ever had.
In your opinion, is there any way to curb it?
Well, it's going to have to take somebody that, you know, the people that are in the position to do something about it usually make a campaign promise that they're going to start to curb crime, but it takes the dollars to hire the people to put them on the streets. The cops I'm talking about, the policemen. And I think at the last time I took stock of the Austin Town, I think they had 42 of them in the Austin Town Police Department, and they do a pretty nice job. But that's where it's at, hiring more people. And here in Youngstown, they'd like to put them on the streets, you know. Go back to the days where they had officers walking the neighborhoods, you know. That's utopia. Yeah, that's what, you know. And how far does it have to go before they take more dollars to put more people to work in the police departments or in law enforcement in some category?
Do you see it ever getting better?
No. I don't. We have more people. Of course, in Mahoney County, I got to take that back now, too, because Youngstown's population, well, at one time, they were, Youngstown was the 59th largest city in the United States. I think they're close to 160,000, and according to the statistics I seen in the paper over this weekend, it was that 95,000. So you can see that we're losing out there in that direction, and undoubtedly the closing of our mills had a heck of a lot to do with it, because the majority of those people were working there in the steel mill, or at least related steel mill jobs that supplied in different departments the different things that the mill would need.
One more question. How do you learn to be a judge? Through experience? I mean, do you just...
That's right. Day? You learn to be a judge by getting elected. And when you're elected, you go into the boiling pot, so to say, right fresh. And it's kind of with trepidation that you do.
It's just trial and error?
It's trial and error, but of course, if you've been practicing, and there is a requirement that you've been a practicing attorney for so many years.
Okay. And how many years do you remember?
I think it's different. I think for the county court, you only have to have been practicing 2 or 3 years.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Okay.